All right, good afternoon. We might get started. We've got a lot to cover today. I'm assuming that you all know Config Manager, that you're members of the Config Manager, maybe SMS Club, and that these kinds of things are very familiar to you. You know what they are. You at least know what they stand for. If you don't, you might be a little bit lost. My name's Michael Pascoe. I've been in the IT industry for about 15 years. I started way back when I looked like this. Of course, data centres back then looked like this as well. And support problems, you know, there were these kinds of things. Now, this was before SMS did operating system deployments and before Microsoft had network monitoring products. So I was writing my own, you know, automated software installation programs and OS deployments and network monitoring tools and that kind of thing. And over the years, I've seen some weird things in the office environment. And I think I'm probably one of the few people here that can say that they've been in a server box before. Who are the other people that can say that? Anyone? Up there? There's always one or two. It's kind of surprising, a bit weird. Anyway, life for me these days is a little bit different. I live in Melbourne. My wife and I have a beautiful baby girl. And around the time that she was born, I co-founded a company called Olica. At Olica, we specialise in Microsoft and Citrix desktop management and virtualisation and server management and virtualisation and private clouds. That's all we do. Although, if you ask the observers around Collins Street in Melbourne, they'd probably say that actually what we do is just drink coffee in coffee shops all day, which might be a fair. But look, we're not here to talk about me. We're here to talk about Config Manager 2012. Now, when Microsoft set out to design their changes in 2012, they had these principles in mind. Today, in this session, we're really only going to talk about the infrastructure components and a little bit of the administration side. We won't be touching on the user side at all. How did that get in there? So, look, we've got a lot to cover. It is a level 400 session. A lot of the content's probably strictly 300 content, but we have to move through it pretty fast, and at pieces we'll be drilling down into more level 400. So please, you know, try to concentrate. I'll try to keep going as quickly as I can. It is a long session, so we'll probably use up most of the time, but I promise I'll try to keep it at least vaguely interesting. This is what we're going to talk about. It's kind of like a tag cloud. The bigger the items, the more time we'll spend on it. The small stuff at the bottom, we'll get through, but it'll be fairly quick. So let's get in. Role changes. There has been some new hires, some fires, and some makeovers. So what's gone? Well, the reporting point, gone. Reporting services point, still there. You can do reports through that. Branch distribution point, also completely gone. So, yeah, ooh. The late 80s, early 90s hip-hop band Boogie Down Productions can get their acronym back, finally. And central site, you know, that concept of the central site is also gone because you can't have multi-tier primary sites anymore, so you can't have a central site at the top. What's changed? Distribution point has changed a lot. There's been a lot of changes in the way you manage and the way you assign content and the way that that content is stored. So we'll see some changes around that in the PKG. You know, folders aren't really the same as they used to be. The Pixie service point also changed, kind of gone. It's actually now just a role, a feature, I should say, that you enable on the distribution point role. And secondary site and primary sites, there have been some changes there. The primary sites with the architecture and central secondary sites we'll see shortly. Now, there's a lot of really good stuff changed and improved and new in 2012. I really, really like it, and I think that you will too, but there's one thing that actually really annoys me that it still hasn't changed. Any takers? The name? It does fit. The name's okay. Any other takers? No? You know, it actually doesn't really matter because we'd have to make it fit in three characters anyway. Yes, the three-letter site code still here, And I'm sorry to say, if you're doing side-by-side migrations, which you pretty much will, you can't use the same three-letter site codes that you already have deployed. So not only are we stuck with them, but you need to invent new ones. All right, so that's pretty much the only bad thing, right? There's lots of good stuff. Site modes. There's just one type. No mixed mode and native mode. You can instead, on each site system, set whether it's HTTP or HTTPS. And so you can still have internet-based client management. You still have your internet-based clients out on the internet. And then they report to the systems that are in the DMZ. It's just that on those systems, you set require HTTPS. The clients are still going to need all the certs and all that, but you don't need to enable it for the whole site. It's not an all or nothing. So you can still have the internal network using HTTP. AD schema, exactly the same as 2007. I know it's not really that big a deal to upgrade your schema again or extend your schema for it, but it's just one less step, one less change control you've got to go through, so you can just use the 2007. There's a couple new roles here. Two roles for the application catalog. It's a new, you know, self-service application catalog that the clients get. There's two new back-end roles for it. And there's two new roles for mobile device management. So you can hook them up to talk to your Exchange server, and then you can do some management through Config Manager of mobile devices using the ActiveSync protocol via Exchange. Cool. I'm not going to talk any more about those, because we've got a lot of other stuff. I want to talk now about some of the architecture changes. Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce you to your new hierarchy. Let's have a look at the primary site changes. No multi-tier primary site. Primary site cannot report to another primary site anymore. It cannot be a child or a parent of another primary site, which means no central sites, because a central site is a primary site that has child primaries. So that can't exist. Now, you can still have multiple primary sites, but just not one on top of each other. So why would we still want multiple primary sites? The main reason is size. If you have more than 100,000 clients, you need more than one primary site. You may also want to have other primary sites if you're engineering some kind of highly available system or trying to plan for site outages. If you need to have, for some reason, a local point of connectivity for administration, then having another primary site somewhere else, you might need one. Although a lot of the old reasons for needing primary sites because of administration delegation disappear. There's possibly some commercial or political reasons why you need a branch of your network or a sub-company to have its own kind of separated child primary site that you can easily break off and sell off. But look, for the most part, the reasons that we used to need primary sites in 2007 kind of disappear. You know, we don't need primary sites because of setting different client settings. We can do that instead by just grouping them up into collections and assigning client settings to those collections. In 2007, if we did have a very deep network hierarchy, a very deep kind of WAN to WAN, you know, site to site to site, point to point link, we might manage content routing of package distribution via primary sites. I'll show you how we do that with secondary sites instead. And like I said before, decentralized administration. That was a really big reason in 2007 for people having separate primary sites, so that they could just say, this whole part of the network, you guys look after. Because it's just way too hard to try to configure it so that you can look after it using our Config Manager primary site. But in 2012, that actually gets a lot easier. There's a very good role-based administration model. So, lots of reasons for previously needing primary sites gone. If you do still have primary sites, though, how do we link them together? A central administration site, a brand new type of site that can only sit at the very top of your layer of primary sites, and it's not a primary site in itself. It's not just a primary site at the top of the hierarchy. It's a brand new type of site. Clients cannot report to it. It cannot have all the roles. It can't have a management point, a distribution point, a Pixie service point, a state migration point, because they're all client-facing roles. Instead, it just sits there to receive really metadata about the primary sites reporting below it. And some of that metadata that it receives from one primary site is sent back down to the other primary sites. And some of the metadata is not. So the metadata that is shared between all primary sites is called global data. And the data that is sent from a primary site up to the CAS but not sent on to the other primary sites, well, that data is just called site data. So things like collection definition, the fact that a collection exists and the membership rules for it, that's global data. That goes up to the CAS and back down to every primary site. So no matter what primary site you go to, you'll see that that collection exists. The membership of it, though, doesn't replicate to all primary sites. The membership itself gets evaluated at the primary site and gets sent to the central administration site, but not back down to the other primaries. So it does mean that when you look in the admin console, a lot of client settings, site settings, the fact that collections exist, the fact that packages exist, if you do those things in one primary site, they actually are visible in all primary sites, which is really great, because if you've worked with multiple primary sites before, you know how much of a pain it is to try to work out what's going on, because you've got all these collections that are duplicated all over the place. So there is only one, you know, all systems collection, and it's replicated. The contents aren't necessarily replicated, but the fact that it exists is replicated everywhere. Cool? That's global data. Now, secondary sites. What's changed here? Well, there's been a big change. You've probably already heard from other sessions. Secondary site, the site data itself is replicated using SQL. So you need a SQL database at every secondary site. When you install a secondary site from a primary site, and by the way, that's the only way to install a secondary site, you have to go to the primary site and using the console do a remote installation to a secondary site. You can tell it to pick up local binaries when it does it, but the initiation is from the primary site. So when you do that, you go through a wizard and you get to choose the database that that secondary site will store, you know, its copy of the site database in. It's not the whole copy, it's a subset. If you don't have a database server there, or you don't want to use one that's there, there's a tick box and you can say install SQL Express, and the whole installation routine automatically installs SQL Express for you. Right? So you don't need to have dedicated SQL servers. And you know, that's the common scenario we'll see, just SQL Express running on every secondary site server, pretty much. When you install a secondary site, it installs management point and distribution point by default. Probably good, you probably want them. Most of the other functions from a secondary site are still available. You know, you can still have a state migration point, you can still do some Pixie booting. So I kind of think it's a bit funny with secondary sites. I kind of feel like a lot has changed. It's totally different the way that we do replication to those secondary sites. It's through SQL. It's not using, you know, inboxes and files going across and then they're all being processed at that secondary site and, you know, things go wrong there. It's just like it's put into the SQL database in the primary site, SQL replication's used. So that's totally different. But then on another hand, I feel like, you know, not much has changed with secondary sites. For the most part, what you understand to be secondary sites today is still how they are. But what has changed a lot is distribution points. So the big change, again, you probably already heard, distribution point traffic can be throttled. You can manage the content distribution traffic to a distribution point straight from a primary site or a child secondary to the DP, and you can throttle it. So you don't need to have a secondary site just to throttle traffic, right? Now this is a big deal because a lot of the reason for putting a secondary site there is just to get that throttling. Now, I think I wanted to show you a little demo here of what that looks like. So if we go into our console and we jump into the administration section here and then expand down to distribution points. Now this DP here, number 3, is just a remote distribution point in the primary site. And we can see that we've got a rate limits tab, so we can, you know, set a percentage of available bandwidth, so it's a smart dynamic throttling. And we've also got the schedule tab. So this looks exactly the same tabs, the same settings as we get to a central, from a primary to a secondary site. There is a difference behind the scene. When you do that from a primary to a secondary, the sender is the component of Config Manager that's actually reading these settings and then throttling the data. There's a new role in 2012 called a Package Transfer Manager, and that's the role that's responsible. Not a role, I shouldn't say role, component. And that component is responsible for distributing the traffic from the central, from the primary or the secondary site to the distribution point. So even though it's a different component that's sending the traffic, it still gets its settings through the same GUI, which I guess is just kind of nice. Okay. There's a lot of other changes with DP management. There's when you assign packages to DP groups, that assignment sticks. So if you add a new DP to the group later, the DP will automatically get the content. That doesn't happen in 2007. There's a brand new content library. This is a new format that files are stored in on the distribution point. There's lots of GUI improvements, lots of wizards, and pre-stage gets good. So all of this, all of these things, I'm going to go through in a lot more detail later in this session, okay? We'll drill down into these. But before we get to it, a little overview of the DP role itself. In 2007, three types of distribution points, a standard DP, a server share DP that was really, used when you had a Pixie service point. It just created a server share DP, it wasn't anything special, and a branch distribution point. So in 2012, there's just one type of distribution point running on either servers or clients. On server, you need 2003 SP2. On clients, you need Vista SP2. Who has Vista? One person. We'll just call it Windows 7, hey? So that's cool. That's cool. Just one type. We don't have to worry about different types. And branch distribution point's gone, yeah. And kind of gets better because, like I said before, if you want the Pixie service point, you don't actually install another role, you just enable a tick box on the distribution point, and it's Pixie. Except that it actually requires WDS still. So you can only get the Pixie feature on a DP if the DP is running on a server OS, which kind of sucks. But, if you don't need Pixie there, maybe you're not doing OS deployment, not catering for the bare metal build scenario, then a client OS running the distribution point role, and you still get all the throttling, which is cool. Okay, so DPs, they're kind of good, right? You get some throttling. If it's running a server OS, you just tick a box and you've got the Pixie service point. So do we even really need secondary servers, secondary sites anymore at all? Really? Well, let's look why we use them. In 2007, this is the benefits we got from a secondary site. Mostly we did it for package distribution throttling. But we did get a couple other things, right? Like local client push, and we could install a proxy management point if we wanted to. Get a few benefits there. So in 2012, we still get a local management point, which means that we do get to manage upstream traffic, right, on a secondary site. So DP can manage downstream traffic, you can throttle that. But upstream traffic from clients, client inventory, hardware inventory, software inventory, client status reporting, that can still be sent to the local management point on the secondary site server, consolidated, and then sent up using the senders to the primary site following the throttling rules. So, maybe you want that, maybe not, I don't know. Like, if you've got a really big network there with a really crappy pipe, then maybe you really do want to get that consolidation and upstream traffic sending, but it's not that much data. Your first installation of the Config Manager client, yeah, it's got a re-hardware inventory, but after that, it's just Delta data. So, it's a consideration. But local client push, I think that one could be one also that justifies a secondary site server in some cases. So if you don't have a secondary site server and you go to do a client push, it'll come from your primary site across your WAN links. If you've already got some other way of distributing software like Config Manager 2007, well, maybe your first client pushes with that, and so you don't really care. It's coming from local infrastructure anyway. Maybe you can use group policies just for that first push, and avoid having that secondary site. But again, it's a consideration and a valid reason for having a secondary site there. Now, I mentioned earlier that in 2007, we could use, you know, deep levels of primary sites to deal with content routing on multi-hop networks. So we can't do that now in 2012 because we can't have multiple primary sites nested to each other. So we can do it with secondary sites. Anyone have any clue what I'm talking about with this content routing on multi-hop networks? Let's have a look at a bit of a demo, right? Or not a demo, just a scenario example. If your network looks like this, and we've got a primary site up in the top, a couple of remote distribution points, this is 2012 infrastructure, remote distribution points connected or part of that primary site, a secondary site down there reporting to that primary site, and maybe a distribution point right down the bottom that's part of that secondary site. So if we distribute content from the primary site to those systems, what happens? Goes straight over the link to the DP, straight over the link to the secondary site, from the secondary site to the DP. Good, fine. Kind of like it is today. I mean, you get throttling to the DPs, but, you know, besides that, you get exactly that with 2007. If we add another hop on that network, what can we do? We can put a distribution point there. Now, if we make that distribution point report directly to the primary site server, so not report to, be part of the primary site, right? What happens? Config manager sends the files straight from the primary site server to the distribution point. But it follows the network topology, which is via there. So we end up sending that traffic twice over link A and link B. So that's no good. Maybe we put that distribution point as part of the secondary site down there. Okay, what happens when we distribute content to that distribution point? It goes directly from distribution point X, secondary site server X, to the DP, following the network topology, which is from there and over there. So we end up with content going over link B twice. So we could have solved this problem with multiple primary sites. I mean, it was a massive overhead to have to do it, but we could have solved it, and now we can't. So what the Config Manager team has done is let us put another secondary site here. And I just want to talk through, just natively, if we just do that by itself, that secondary site has to report to the primary site, right? Because it can't. It has to report to a primary site. Can't report to another secondary. And if we just leave it purely like that, and we distribute content from the primary to the secondary, Z, Config Manager sends it directly to Z following the network topology, which is over link A and over link B. So then we end up with it going over link A twice, still. So what we can do, this is a new feature, we have to leave secondary site Z reporting to the primary site. There is no choice there. We have to do that. But we can set a new relationship between secondary site X and secondary site Z. And that's called a content routing relationship. So essentially, we tell Config Manager that when site Z needs content, get it from site X. So from the primary site, you say distribute content there. The primary site tells site X to send that to site Z, goes over the wire once. Once site Z has it, it can send it to a remote distribution point in its site, and it only goes over once. Long, complicated example for an environment and a situation that you probably never find. Because even though your network could look like this, and if it did, you could have used multiple primary sites to solve that problem, and now you can't, and so it's great that Microsoft has given us an option for solving the problem still, people's networks don't really look like this anymore. They're meshed, right? How many of you really have that kind of hop-to-hop-to-hop scenario anymore? Maybe a few. If you do, you do. Awesome. This is for you. So, secondary sites, what do we get? We get the local management point with a local DP. We can manage upstream bandwidth. We get local client push if we need it. We can deal with that multi-hop network content routing. Now, if none of those are really big on your list of things that you need, and I think for the most part they won't be in Australian networks, then you might not need a secondary site. But do still think about other functions besides just a pure DP, right? Just think about state migration point, Pixie booting. So I suggest that for the most part, we'll probably get rid of a lot of secondary sites. But I don't think we'll get rid of servers at remote sites and replace them with clients or anything. I think for the most part, in 2012 designs, we'll still end up with a lot of remote servers running a distribution point role with WDS and the Pixie enabled and, you know, state migration point on it for OS deployments. Right. Now, I said earlier that there was a lot of other changes in DPs and that I wanted to go through in some more detail. So that's what we'll do. First thing, DPs, we've got these dynamic distribution point groups. So we had distribution point groups in 2007. And they've changed a little here. So in 2012, we can deploy package content straight to DPs like we always could, fine. We can group those DPs up into distribution point groups. And then we can deploy content to those DP groups. Now in 2007, if we do that, there's a once-off evaluation of what DPs are in that group right now. Okay, cool, I've got that list. I'll actually just assign this content to those DPs. And if you add another group, add another DP later, doesn't get it. So in 2012, that relationship from the DP, from the package to the DP group sticks. So the package is assigned or distributed to that DP group, and if you change the membership of the DP group later, then the content automatically deploys to that new DP. So that's good, right? Don't know why it was, you know, not like that right from the beginning, but it works how we expect it to work. That relationship of package to DP group, permanent. Now, there's a new way of targeting package content to DPs, and it's using collections. Now, you have to really listen to me here because it can get confusing. You know what collections are, and I need to be clear here. What I'm going to talk about is distributing content to distribution points. It is not deploying applications to users or computers in collections. That is still done through other mechanisms in Config Manager. I was going to say kind of the same way, well, Microsoft have actually changed it a little. They've solved that, you know, that debate around whether it's called an advertisement or an advertisement. You know, they've solved it. It's called a deployment. So I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about a deployment to actual users. I'm talking about distributing content to distribution points. So today you kind of have to go, oh, I've got to distribute this application. Who am I going to? Which DPs need it? I'll just put on everything because I don't know which DPs will need it, right? It's not a bad approach. Maybe you'll still keep doing that. But if you want to narrow the DPs that you need that content on, then you can distribute them to distribution point groups. But again, you're kind of thinking like an admin then. You're going, oh, I'll distribute it to all the distribution point groups in Geelong or all the ones in South Melbourne or something like that. Where Microsoft are trying to encourage you to think a little higher level and go, well, who's going to need this content? Maybe I can just, you know, use some kind of collection that represents the users or the computers that are going to need to install the content and target it to that. And then let Config Manager work out which DPs that is. Cool? So, you know, which users and computers, that's collections. So that's why we're saying we can distribute or target package content to collections. And the way we do it, we take a collection, we associate that collection with a distribution point group, or more than one, and then when it comes time to distributing content for a package, instead of choosing a distribution point or a distribution point group, we choose a collection. That once-off evaluation there and then, kind of like it used to happen for DP groups in 2007, that once-off evaluation of what DP groups are associated with this collection right now, okay, they're the things that I'm actually going to, you know, assign to the package distribution, and they'll stick. So really it kind of looks at what those associations are, but really what's saved in the console is the distribution point groups being assigned to the package content, not the collections themselves. So if you later on change the association of collection to DP group, it doesn't matter. You've already done your deployment. It's too late. It's not dynamic. Now, that might still be a bit confusing. So let's just quickly do it. If we go here to this Adobe Reader application, when we go distribute content, pretty simple. We choose either a distribution point, that was that first column, a distribution point group, that was the second column, or a collection. If we choose a collection, we can choose either a user collection or a device collection. Let's say the stock warehouse computers. Because we're thinking, who's going to need this application? Oh, probably the stock warehouse computers are. Which DPs do they use? Oh, we don't care. Config Manager will work it out from things that we've previously configured. I'm sure you think like that. So now that we've done that, even though I assigned it at that time to a collection, if we come back and look at content locations, there's no mention of the collection anymore. Instead, we have the distribution point groups that were associated to that collection at that point in time, and the members of those distribution points groups at that point in time. Now, the reason it puts the actual members there, you might be a bit surprised by that, going, cool, I get the distribution point groups, but why is the actual DPs there? Well, the reason for that is if you add a new DP to a DP group later, it'll automatically get the software. And we'll see, you know, the other DP appear in this list. But if you remove a DP from a DP group, it won't automatically delete the software. And that's actually kind of by design, because you don't really, you know if you don't need that content there. So Microsoft didn't make it auto-delete the content that came to it via that DP group membership. So even though it's not a member of the DP group anymore, because of this direct membership and the content locations here, that DP will still be receiving the content until you run some other wizards and remove it from that DP, right? It's really just a safety thing to make sure that content doesn't get accidentally deleted. And then you go, oh no, I accidentally removed it from the DP, now I need to DP group, now I need to put it back in the DP group, and the content needs to come back across the wire. All right, so that was all content assignment, right? How do we deal with working out what content gets out onto what distribution points? But the actual format of that content now has changed. It's no longer just an SMB share, you know, with a package, with a folder for every package, and those folders mirroring the source. It's not like that anymore. There's some kind of single instance storage now implemented with this new package format store. It's called a content library. Single instance storage. Who's heard that before? Yeah, a few hands. Are you thinking Groveler's back? The Riz Groveler? Yeah, that's what I thought when I first saw it. It's not that. It's so the Groveler was, you know, the single instance storage service on the RIS servers, and it was a file level filter driver or something that did, you know, block level dedupe. It's not that. It's file level deduplication implemented by Config Manager code, right? Content library is actually really three sub libraries, and each sub library is actually just a folder, right? First one, package library. In this folder, every package is represented by an ini file called packageid.ini. Inside that ini file, there is a version number of what the current release of that package is. You know, when you update and refresh distribution points, or update distribution points, it increments the version number. That's in that ini file. The second folder is called a data library. For every package, there's two things. A package id.version.ini and a package id.version folder. And inside that folder, there's a folder structure that mirrors the original source package, the package source. Except the files themselves aren't there. The folder structure is the same, but the file themselves aren't there. So instead of setup.exe being there or whatever application.msi, there's a representation of that file, which is setup.exe.ini or application.msi.ini. And inside that .ini file, there's a bit of metadata about the original file that it replaced, the file size, the timestamp. And importantly, there's the hash of the original file. Now, the third component of the content library is called the file library. Now, remember I said the actual file isn't in the data library anymore, just a representation of it. And inside the .ini file that represents it, there's a hash. Well, the actual file is stored in the file library, and it's not called setup.exe anymore. It's simply just called hash. No file extension. Kind of confusing to explain to people. Just hash. So instead of just having all the files in one big flat structure, just called the hash, it's slightly better, they're grouped by the first four characters of the hash. So you don't get one huge directory. Instead, you get kind of one semi-huge directory with all these four-character alphanumeric characters folders. And then inside each folder, for every original source file, there's three new files. One is just hash, right? No extension. That is actually the original file, the setup.exe, the application.msi, renamed just to its hash. And then there's two other files, hash.ini, which actually includes a trackback link to all the packages that use that file, we'll show you that soon, and hash.sig, which is a digital signature of the original file. Now, the linking there from the data library, which has all the folder structure and the original file name, to the actual file content is through that hash. And then when it's, you know, used, we still need to know that original structure of the folders, so that comes from that folder structure in the data library, right? You with me? Is it making any sense? Let's have a look at it. Right. I'm going to create a new application. What we'll do here, we'll create a new app, we'll create a new package in Config Manager, and we'll distribute that package to a remote distribution point, and we'll see a couple of things. We'll see the new package transfer manager log, so we'll see it transferring the package, and then we'll see when it's received on that remote distribution point where all the files go into this new content library. Okay? It'll be quick. Now, the particular package that I'm going to use happens to be the appv client, right? This is nothing to do with appv. This, I'm sorry that I used it. It just happened to fit some other good. It had some other good parts to it that I'll show you later on. But this could be Visio or Project or any other application. It just happens to be that I'm deploying the appv client as a package. Okay. Demo sccmo1. So we just create a package, pretty much like we always used to. Sometimes it's a shame that sometimes this works and sometimes it doesn't, because when it works it's kind of better than it used to be. You know, we get good read ahead going on here, but it's actually not working. Oh, maybe that's my fault. Pretty sure that's what I typed. That explains it. All right, so we choose our package source folder, right? And then this wizard lets us create a program here. I don't need a program for this demo. We're just dealing with the package content. So the package is created for the x64, and then we need to deploy that to the distribution points, right? So we right-click, distribute content,
We get this thing that we saw before. Instead of choosing a collection or a DP group, I'm just going to choose the one DP that I'm interested in. This is the remote DP connected to the primary site. And I hit next. Now, over here is the package transfer manager, the new component on the primary site that deals with sending out content to the remote DPs. Shortly, we should see it fire and start to send content out to the remote DP, which is here. Now, there's this new share called SMS underscore DP dollar, and this is the share automatically created on that remote DP that will receive that content into. It will spool into there, it will disappear pretty quickly because it's processed and moved into the real content library. So you can see it appearing up there in the top right. It has gone now, so it just kind of quickly went in there and then it got all processed and moved into the content library. So if we look through the actual package manager log file, you can see it shipping there from the central, from the primary site, I should say, to that remote DP, going into that folder. And then it quickly got moved out of there and put into the content library. Now, where did it go in here? Just quickly grab the package ID from that new one we created. It's 00B. So in the content library, we've got our three sub-libraries. If we go to the package library first, we'll see this new ini file, 00B.ini. And inside that is version 1.1. Yes, it is version 1. That's correct. And then what was the next step? File library or data library? Data library is correct. So here's a new folder, 00B.1, package ID.version. And we see the original, you know, source folder structure here, but not the actual files, right? Setup.exe.ini. And if we look inside that, we see the hash of the original file. And that's the file that we need to look for in the file library. Now, I'm not going to look for that one. I instead will show you this other one that's under the shared or the support Watson folder. Now, this is AppV client, x64, and there's this Dr. Watson shared.msi here. And look at this hash, 9783D. So if we go into our file library and look for the, you know, grouped by the first four characters, 9783D, then we see in here three files. That file there, just hash, no file extension, is the original drwatson.msi. It's not called that, but it's it. And then there's two other files, the ini file and the digital signature. Now, the ini file, if we open this up, this is what I want to show you, there's backlinks to which packages use this file. So we've got 00B.1, which is the one that I just deployed. So I'd expect that, but we also see 004.1. So coming back in the console, we see package 4 is the AppV client x86. So they, two separate packages, share a common file. But that file is only stored once on the content library. And not only is it only stored once, but when it was sent from the primary site to that remote distribution point by the package transfer manager, when the package transfer manager got to that file, it actually said, no, I'm not copying that, it's already there. So not only is it single instance storage, but it's single instance transmission as well. And that's why I wanted to use that AppV client instead of some other app. Okay. I might just take questions at the end, actually. Is that okay? The problem is, I mean, this is cool, right? Like, kind of cool. Like, single instance storage, single instance transmission. We've got this kind of complicated file structure, but maybe we don't really care about that. We don't have to see it a lot. But, you know, we can't just have a client install or run a program by saying run directly from distribution point share. Because you can't have a client just connect to that file, you know, to the content library there and just run a setup from there. The files aren't really there. They're all over the place. So if you do want to have a file, a program run directly from DP, we need to do something else with it, right? So by default with 2012, instead of running from a DP, the default is on all programs to download content and execute locally. So the Bits client downloads the content from the DP, and as it's downloading it from, you know, its funny file structure from the content library, it actually reassembles it into the original source structure on the local machine, changes into the local directory, and runs the program command line. So that's fine if you're using Bits to download and execute, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. I guess we'll start using it a lot. It's just that a lot of Config Manager implementations at the moment just don't do it. You know, I don't really know why. We're maybe just kind of too set in our ways and we want to just run from the distribution point. We don't really see much need to download them first because clients are well connected to DPs. But I think, you know, you'll probably be using that as your default now. So you've got to think about Bits clients. Are they working? Do you know how to troubleshoot them? Do you know how they run? Think about cache for the Bits client. Get that sorted now, okay? If you don't want to download them first into the Bits client cache, then you can still run it directly from the distribution point, but you have to tick a box on the package saying make this available directly from a DP share as well. So it stays in the content library, but it gets duplicated into another share. So if you do that for every single package, then you're going to duplicate your whole package storage on the DP. I'll just quickly show you that one there. Right-click on it, properties, data access, copy this package to a distribution point share. You can set a custom share name like you could in 2007, but if you just leave it like that, it will just copy it straight to the built-in, you know, SMSPK X dollar share, which I have here somewhere. There we go. Now, I think it was 00A or 00B was the package name. So shortly, because I ticked that box, I'm pretty sure I hit OK, we should see that content, there it is, really fast, be copied into the DP dollar share, SMSPK X C D E dollar share. And it didn't have to come across the wire. It was already in the content library locally. It just got duplicated over into that new share. By the way, there's a new component on the distribution point called a DP provider. And that was the component that was responsible for copying that over to that share. Okay. So that's the new format of distribution point content on DPs, content library. Let's talk a little bit about pre-staging content. There's been a lot of improvements. It's now pretty easy, right? All you basically do is on a DP, mark it as enabled for pre-staging, and on a package, set some settings about how you're going to treat content when it's meant to be deployed or distributed to a pre-staged DP. So we just jump into the DPs, have a look at this DP I've been dealing with. Now, it's just on the first tab here, and right down the bottom, enable this distribution point for pre-staged content. Turn that on, and then go into every package that we want to pre-stage. And on that package, we choose, I think it's under the distribution settings tab, we choose when we distribute this package to a distribution point that happens to have that enable for pre-stage option set, what are we going to do? Are we really going to follow the pre-stage rules or not? Are we going to say, you know what? I don't care that it said pre-stage content on this DP. I'm just going to send it across the wire anyway. Maybe it's just a small package, and you go, small package, I don't want to deal with like USB drives and stuff. Just send it across the wire. So we can choose this first option, automatically download content anyway. Or we can say, no, you know what? No way, we're not doing that. We set pre-stages for a reason. We're manually copying this data no matter what. Doesn't matter how big it is or anything. If it's assigned to a pre-staged DP, we're never sending it across the wire. Or, and what I suggest will be used most, is that we can choose this middle option saying download only content changes. So the first seeding of that package content has to be done offline through the offline media with the pre-staged tools we'll show you soon. But every subsequent update to that package, because we just made a little config change or something like that, then that can go over the wire, which is pretty cool. So after you've set those settings on the packages and you set the setting on the DP in the first place to enable pre-staging, how do you actually get the content out to those remote DPs? You pick your packages you need, right-click, create pre-staged content. I multi-selected packages there, by the way. Select a file name. I'll just overwrite my previous one. And then it goes and churns out one single file. Now when it, oh by the way, just notice this. Do you see this other icon in the taskbar here? Every pop-up in Config Manager 2012 console now gets its own little icon. Yeah, so you don't have to keep like minimizing the console to find those windows that are behind. Small things, but you know, they make us happy. So this wizard will create one file with all those packages that we chose, and we need to get that one file together with this one exe, which is on the tools subfolder in your installation CD. We need to get that exe and that one package file to that remote distribution point via a USB drive or a CD or something like that. We plug it in there. And then all we do is just run extractcontent.exe and we point it at that one file that we are busy creating right now with this wizard. And I really want to show you. It'll create a file like that anyway when it's done. I probably shouldn't have chosen Office. There we go, all done. So we get those two files out on the remote DP via a USB drive, and that's it. We run extractcontent.exe with a parameter of, you know, whatever dot, what's the extension, pfgx, and I think it's slash s to say don't import, only import it if the content is newer than what's already there, and that's it. Config Manager deals with the rest. You don't do anything else because you've already assigned the content to the DP, you set up the rules about how you want to handle distribution, you run that on the remote DP, and it just deals with sorting itself out completely. So no more preload or anything like that. That's pretty cool. I really like the fact that you can say seed that first one, but then changes after that just, you know, do over the wire. All right. There is heaps more stuff with distribution point content management that I can't talk about really in any detail. You know, there's lots of improvements with the wizards so that you can make sure you've got all the right content on all the DPs you need. There's a function where you can set it up to automatically check that the content that's supposed to be on the DPs is actually still there. You can run that on a schedule. The package transfer manager takes care of that. You set up the schedule yourself through the GUI. And, you know, there's no Pixie distribution point share now either. So how do we get boot images to the Pixie, Pixie WDS, really, to the remote install folder? Essentially, all we do on distribution points that have been Pixie enabled through the tick box, we do that first, and then we go into our boot images that we want to be available via Pixie, and we just tick a box on the boot image that says, you know, make this available on Pixie. And then the DP provider on that distribution point goes, oh, that image is supposed to be available on Pixie, so I'll grab a copy of it out of the content library and I'll put it into the remote install folder on the WDS server automatically. Kind of like how we saw it grab a copy of the content of those other packages from the content library and put them into the traditional config SMS PKG $X$share, right? So you don't need to worry about updating Pixie distribution point content either. You just tick the box on the image, make it available. Right, let's move on a little. Out of DP, you know, detail into something a little more high level. Whew. Discovery. Not really much has changed, actually. Because we've got, you know, this concept of global data and site data and everything replicating around, we get a bit of a better visibility of what's going on with discovery methods instead of having to drill down to every secondary site to see exactly what discovery methods they may or may not have enabled there. We can see it all in one spot in the administrator console. But as far as the actual discovery methods themselves go, not a lot has changed. There is one new discovery method. It's called the Active Directory Forest Discovery. And this method, it can only run on a primary site server. This method can actually go and look into your AD sites and services and discover boundaries from them. So it actually just discovers sites and subnets and it creates a boundary for those discovered sites and subnets. But it doesn't automatically assign that boundary to any sites or anything like that. You wouldn't want it doing that. It just creates a boundary object in Config Manager. You then need to go and use that boundary object in boundary groups. So boundary group, well, there's a boundary. It's kind of like it is today. AD site, IP range, IP network. Nothing flash. Doesn't do anything by itself. But you assign them, group them up into boundary groups, one or more boundaries, and then you use that boundary group as either part of a definition of a site boundary. So this is us assigning a group of boundaries to a site, primary or secondary. Or you use the boundary group to manage which clients can use which content locations. Content location is a distribution point or a state migration point. So this is kind of like protected site systems in 2007 or protected distribution points in earlier versions of 2007 and SMS. But you just set it through the one, it's actually all on the one page, whether you're using this boundary group as a site boundary or a content boundary. And it's on the content boundary now, rather than on the site, that you can choose whether it's fast or slow. You know, and the fast or slow is still used by the deployment, the advertisement settings, to decide whether, you know, how it should handle clients when they are assigned to packages in or, you know, meant to run programs. If they're slow connections to the primary to the distribution point or the content location now, maybe you can choose not to install it. Instead, wait until that client's on a fast network. Right. But that whole concept existed in 2007, really hasn't changed. What has changed? Client settings. Now, I already mentioned at the beginning that client settings can now be set and assigned to collections instead of being site-wide. You can also do that for what inventory you're going to gather. So we used to do that previously with smsdef.mof. Who has used that? It sucks. Yeah. So it's gone. But it did die a really, really sexy death because it is now just through this nice GUI, right? You can just go in there, tick the things you want, and that's it. You don't even have to open Notepad. So I might just show you quick little client settings. If we go the administration section, client settings, And I might create a new custom client settings for devices. And maybe I'll just call it all laptops. And here are all the kinds of client settings you can set. When you tick them, maybe we want, where's hardware inventory? There we go. And software deployment. Now, when you tick them, they appear on the left, and then you can click on them and then actually set particular details. So for hardware inventory, we can go into set classes, and we can say for all laptops, because that's who we're creating this one for, we do want to inventory battery, let's say. And software deployment, we don't want to notify users that they've got new deployments. And actually, we're going to change some of the software inventory settings. We will or won't get certain files on this set of computers. I'll just turn it off for the moment. So now we've set this little granular group of settings that we want to apply to some clients. We haven't assigned it to any clients yet. I happen to call it all laptops. That doesn't mean anything. We have to take that client setting and assign it to collections. So we'll assign it to, there we go. We've got a collection called all laptops. That makes sense. So now that group of settings are assigned to all computers that are in the all laptops collection. And computers can be in multiple collections, and you can have multiple different client settings assigned to multiple different collections. And if there's a conflict, this precedence order here is used to decide which ones stick. You can move items up and down, and it's kind of like, you know, group policy processing order there, and the one that's at the top wins. Cool. Role-based administration. There has been a lot of work done by Microsoft in role-based administration. You know, this was one of the big reasons why you all, not all, some of you needed other primary sites. And trying to delegate certain portions of functions in Config Manager 2007 to different groups of users was really hard. So there's been a lot of work, and there's a whole new model in here for role-based admin. Now, we don't have lots of time, so I'll just tell you the real three-step basics, okay? One, you create what's called a security role, and in that you define the allowed actions on certain types of objects. So you might say, this role can edit packages and programs, but not delete them. Or it can create collections, or it can deploy target software to these, or to collections. Not which collections, just two collections. Okay? That's the role. The second step is to think about, well, we know what this role can do. It can do certain functions on certain object types, but which instances of those object types? If the object types were collections, we need to think about, well, which collections? Just choose them, right? If the object types were packages or programs or site settings or task sequences, then we need to go, well, which task sequences, packages and programs and site settings? So how do you kind of choose which ones of those? I mean, collections are kind of easy because you just choose a collection, but how do you choose which ones of those other objects? They're all over the place. Well, there's a new thing called a scope, security scope. Security scope by itself isn't anything. It's just a name, but you assign that security scope to all the things, packages, programs, advertisements, deployments, site settings, that you want to group up and give that role to someone. So if we've said you can edit packages, well, which packages? We find out which packages and we associate them to a particular security scope. And then the last step is to link them all together. So we assign the actual role to a group of users. So from AD, user or group, there's the role that we assigned. And then we say, you can perform this role on either all objects or only the objects that are these types of collections, these collections, or objects that are associated with a particular security scope. Right? It's very good. There's lots of work done there, and it really can help you or enable you to delegate that administration to different groups, but you're going to have to plan it out. You need to think about first who needs to be able to do what to which kinds of objects and which kinds of computers. Map all that out first and then go and translate it into, you know, roles and security scopes. If you just get in the console and start trying to do it, it'll get a bit confusing. Okay, installation. We're nearly there. A few little pointers I have for you. central site first. So I don't know if we're going to really need central sites that much. You know, for the most part, we probably don't need multiple primary sites in most Australian networks. We don't really have that many companies with more than 100,000 users. But if you do need a central administration site, you need it there first. You can't add it on later. So that's a consideration. Even if you don't need it today, if you think that there's a chance of having to need another primary site, you have to start with the central site. The scheme is the same as 2007, so nothing really to do there. There's lots of... you can use service accounts now for lots of connections. So site-to-site, site-to-SQL, site-to-AD. Beforehand, they all had to be the machine dollar accounts, right? You had to add the machine dollar account to the system management container in AD and, you know, make sure that the machine dollar accounts were admins on other config manager servers and on the SQL server and stuff. A lot of that is now optionally able to be used by a service account. You can still use machine dollar accounts. X64 for pretty much all roles or all roles, except for distribution points. They can still run on x86. The .NET Framework 4 full version, not just the client profile, is needed for pretty much all site server components. A lot of the roles, when you install the role, if you're installing it to a 2008 machine, you can have it automatically install IIS for you with all the right subcomponents, etc., so you don't need to pick all those, which is really nice. But it seems like you still need to install bits manually first. WebDAV's not needed anymore. Remote differential compression, you still need to go and tick first in, you know, features or roles or whatever it's in 2008. If you're going to Pixie-enable your distribution point, you need WDS installed first. It won't automatically go and install it for you. And if, you know, with a sub, which I haven't really spoken about, but you still need WSUS there first. Okay? All right, so really quickly, just to recap the really important stuff, three-letter site codes still there. No native and no mixed mode. Neither of those exist. It just is what it is, and you choose per site system, whether it's HTTP or HTTPS, or both. The scheme is the same as 2007, no multi-tier primary, which means you get no centrals, and some data from that primary layer. If you do have a client, a central administration site, a CAS above it, some of that metadata is called global and does replicate all around, which is really nice. Secondary site data replicated via SQL out to the secondary sites. In 2007, your hierarchy could look like this. It can't in 2012. It could look like this. You might not have, you've got your deep the SQL down there on the secondaries. You might not really need another primary, so it might look like that. If you don't think you'll ever need another primary, it might look like that. And we'll see that much more typically, much more simplified architectures. What's changing roles? No branch distribution point, no reporting point. There's a couple of new roles for application catalog and mobile device management. Lots of changes in DPs. We've done that to death. Boundary groups. They're used to define site boundaries and also protect site systems, called content location now. Client settings aren't site-wide. They can be set individually and assigned to collections. NoSMSDef.mof, a GUI for that, and there's really good role-based administration and delegation to let you not require multiple primary sites. This is a new product, obviously. I'm really keen just to get some feedback on the presentation and the information that we're presenting. So I'd really love it if you did follow Olica Tech. I'll tweet out a link to a blog post, which will just have a follow-up from this presentation with a recap of the important stuff. We'd love to hear your feedback on it, both via Twitter and also through your feedback forms through TechEd, of course. If you do that, you can win one of those touch mice. Those feedback are really important to us. So, I'm pretty sure we'd be very close to time. I think we've got 5 minutes max, if there's any questions. Up there. Client health. Yeah, look, there is still the SHV role. So the client health is all built in. It's not like an extra add-on or anything like that. To be honest, I'm not really sure much detail about it yet, but I believe it's still there and all integrated, no other add-ins for it. Yeah. Right, so the question was, is there any guidance around whether you use service accounts or the machine dollar accounts, was that the question, for connections to AD and for site-to-site? Look, as far as I'm aware, there isn't really any right or wrong way of doing that at the moment. Both are completely valid approaches. I think the important thing to remember is if you're using a service account, that it's bad practice just to say, I'll make one account, make it domain admin, and then I won't have any problems. So you still have to deal with that. This is a service account. I still need to go and give it the rights wherever I was going to give those machine dollar account rights anyway. And look, frankly, I actually kind of found it easier so far just to use machine dollar accounts, even though I like the idea of using service accounts better. Question up there. Okay, so that's a good question. Can we use a non-Microsoft share, a SIF share, as a distribution point? And the answer is no. There is only one type of distribution point, and it has to run the config manager server-side or client-side components. It can't just be a remote SIF share. Yeah. Which I know lots of people have kind of been hanging out for, but I guess the answer, the compromise there is that it can just be on a client workstation, a Windows 7. Yep, another question just there.
The existing PKI certificate extraction we used from 2007, so the certificate templates.
Right, so the question was, if you do use the HTTPS version of the roles, and you're running native mode at the moment, are you? Yep. Can we reuse the certificates that have been created in 2007? Specifically the templates, I think you're asking about. Because obviously the certificates themselves you can't use because they're for different sites, different computers. Whether there's actually new templates that have some small detail change in them, to be honest, I'm not quite sure. I can follow that up and tweet what I find at Olica Tech, but... you're certainly going to have to reissue new certificates, just whether you can use the same template, I'm not quite sure. Yeah.